Blog Talk Radio.
Good morrow, and welcome back to The Realm. I'm epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, this is a vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis, and each of those creatives has a different backstory and specialize in a plethora of art forms. So as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy novels at jvhilliard.com, or you can follow me at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter/X, whatever it's called now, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or you could just look for me old school at Facebook and Discord, just as J.V. Hilliard. And I want to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. AlteredRealityMag.com is the place where you can find it. And it is a portal to publication for mostly first-time authors and poets of speculative fiction. So if you're a fan of the gothic, or you like horror, or you like sci-fi or fantasy or dystopian stuff, you're going to find it there. We even had on a few weeks ago, we had a poet from the magazine on who did horror poetry, which was fun, to hear that, especially around Halloween, it was a nice fit for us at that time of year. But alteredrealitymag.com, go there, check it out, and they've got everybody from award-winning authors down to first-time, publishers, and I hope you'll enjoy it there. And so as we reach the witching hour here, I'm going to cast my magic message spell and take control of the airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you Dungeons & Dragons nerds out there like me, and you know who you are, the duration of my transmutation magic here is about 30 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. And tonight we are chronicling the adventures of a fellow fiction scribe, and Beth Barani. And Beth is an author. She's also an editor, and among things, a world traveler. We're going to get into a little bit of it later. But Beth, again, well met, and welcome to the realm.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Super fun. I'm excited to chat with you tonight.
Yeah, and tell everybody a little bit about you, the kind of stuff you write, and where they can find you.
Sure, absolutely. So I call it Magical Tales of Romance, Mystery, and Adventure. I'm primarily a science fiction and fantasy writer, writing tales to empower young women and adults, women, to be the hero of their own lives. So all my books feature strong young women going out on adventures. I have Henrietta the Dragon Slayer trilogy, a Janie McAllister mystery series, which is a space station investigator, so that's science fiction. And then I have 5 sweet paranormal romances that are just like little Hallmark bites. And people can find me at my author site, author.bethbarani.com. And shall I talk about my other stuff as well?
Yeah, far away.
Yeah, so I coach science fiction and fantasy novelists and teach and have a podcast too and do all kind of supportive things, primarily in developmental edits and teaching both the craft of science fiction and fantasy writing as well as mindset tools to help us get writing, get into the creative flow, overcome writer's block, and really develop a writer's life, a writer's career, since that's what I do, and I love helping others do the same.
Well, let's start with that, because the majority of our listeners obviously are creatives, and many of them are not just readers, but they're also authors. And what I found by answering their questions a lot is, that they're aspiring authors, and they're looking for advice to get us. As somebody who helps people and coaches them in this space, can you share, maybe cheat a little bit here and give a freebie or two away? Like what's the best piece of advice you can offer to an aspiring author, and what's something you tell them to stay away from at all costs?
Sure. So of course this is such a vast realm, but something that I noticed is that beginning creatives, and this also applies to anyone in any creative domain. I've seen it with visual artists and poets and, you want to start, but for some reason you haven't started, and that can be a very painful moment. So to get started, which is going to make all the difference in the world, you're going to feel so much better once you're actually working on your art, is to make the goal a today goal, not a like, oh, I have this huge project to do, but make it a today goal and make it super reasonable. Like, oh, sure, 5 minutes, oh, I could do that, or 10 minutes, or my preferred is 20 minutes. I set the timer for 20 minutes, and I use this tool all the time to get started. People are in a lot of angst around their art because they think it won't be perfect. They're trying to match some invisible standards and or visible standards. But first drafts are messy, super messy. Oh, my God, so messy. So we need to give ourselves permission to just play in a very confined, contained, safe space. So by setting the timer for that reasonable amount of time, then just go for it and consider it play. Consider the fact that you're going to be able to do many, many takes or many, many versions or many, many sketches and just start and let the, you know, because the body and the heart yearning to create. So let it have that safe space and consider it like a playground. That's the other metaphor I love. It's like you put children in a playground, it's a very safe space. It's got a boundary. It's got the right equipment for the right ages. And just let yourself play, especially as a beginner. You're in the beginner's artist playground. Just enjoy it. And then each day you come to the playground and do your very reasonable amount of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever is reasonable. You're not trying to spend all day. You're not trying to spend half a day. You're just doing what you can do right now. And someone recently told me that that's something that I do very well. My entire life, I've always had to ask myself, well, what can I do right now? And that was the only way I could get started. And it was also the only way I can function in the world since, you know, I have a disability and I have to deal with what I can do, not what I wish I could do or what other people are doing. It's like, who cares what other people are doing? Do what you can do. And that will make, by the end of the day, imagine looking back, seeing that you've created your work for that day. You did what you could do that day, even if it was 5 minutes or 20, you'll feel so much better. And then every day you do that and it develops like a muscle. You get better at it. You get stronger at it. You're able to spend more time. Your craft will improve. Don't worry. That will take care of itself as long as you show up today for your very safe, contained, in your contained environment and just do some work right now. And that's what I offer people for the positive. And then the negative is do not compare yourself to other people's polished, finished work or, you know, so-and-so has put out so many books and all that. Like, stop that. We don't know what they did to get there. We don't know how many years they toiled in obscurity to become an overnight success, which often happens.
Right.
So, yeah. Right? Yeah. So you really want to, the only comparison that is really helpful is to compare yourself to who you were yesterday. Oh, yesterday I didn't do art. So you know what? Today I'm going to challenge myself. I'm going to do a little bit of art. And that's what I'm going to do. Because you know by the end of the day, when you look back on your day, imagine how good you will feel that you've done your art. And that's how I talk to myself. I'm like, Beth, when you fall asleep tonight, what is the one thing you want to have done? Oh, I want to have put attention on my book. Or I want to have, you know, moved it forward a little bit. And however it shows up for me, sometimes it's writing, sometimes it's editing, sometimes it's research. So those two things, you know, really create a safe space to work every day and do not compare yourself with others. We don't final projects, you know, that polish. I can't tell you how many hundreds of hours I put into a book to make it be ready to publish. So it's not fair for a beginner to compare themselves to someone's project that they've put hundreds, maybe thousands of hours into. And you're at
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, my first book, it was my worst book. And it was, you know, by book four, I'm so much improved. And there's parts of me that wants to go back and rewrite it, but it was an Amazon bestseller. You know what I mean? And, you know, I look back and I say to myself, I look at it, you know, with a critical eye, but you mentioned a few things in there that I think are worth that really noteworthy. I mean, number one, I call it muscle memory. You just said your muscles get stronger. You're right. I mean, when I first started as someone, I had no training in this. I didn't know what I was doing, but I shared it with people And it was that constructive criticism where iron really does sharpen iron. You know, and I joined a writing class, and I shared it with beta readers and editors, and you just have to be open-minded, knowing that what you said is exactly right. Hundreds of hours of polishing. It truly is a team sport where you've got a group of people that are helping you make the best product you can and putting that out there. And I think that is sage advice. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with all of that. I think that was a great answer to what I thought was a very simple question, but you really, you nailed it. So, well done. Well done.
Oh,
so let's talk about you and your work, because you mentioned something earlier, and I get this question very often from readers and frankly writers, even those that I see at the conventions and or book signings and things like that. They, can you or should you as an author write in multiple genres? And, some people are afraid that, if you look for Stephen King in romance, you're not going to see Stephen King in horror and that kind of stuff. And how do you carry those names over? And I know people have created two or three, even five pen names just to write in different genres. You don't do any of that. Like, you're brave in the sense that you write in multiple genres here, and I think for multiple age groups. I mean, you dip down as far as young adult, as well mm-hmm. as, and that obviously bleeds into new adult and adult stuff that you're doing. How have you handled writing in multiple genres, and what kind of advice would you give to someone who, maybe by day is a fantasy author like you and me and wants to venture into sci-fi or dip their toe into the horror genre?
Yeah, well, I think of some of my favorite authors out there and how I was as a young reader, especially as a teen, when I found an author I loved, I would try and read everything they wrote. And it didn't matter to me that it was wide-ranging, because there's something about an author that remains the same usually across genres. And even if it departed, I would, one from the other. I'm thinking, well, as a teen, I read a lot of Richard Bach, who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull. So he wrote kind of parable, but fiction. They had deep spiritual meanings and very reflective-oriented, but also a story. And he wrote for kids, and he wrote for adults. And as a teenager, I found his work, all of it, whether it was short, whether it was a novel, a short story, whatever, super inspirational. Another example is Diane Duane, who writes both science fiction and fantasy with very different theories. Also her, I love both. Elizabeth Moon is another example who writes both science fiction and fantasy. So I knew that my work was going to be probably always in the science fiction fantasy realm. And I don't mind that I jumped over into romance. Romance for me was an experiment, something I've been yearning to write for many years. And it was a great experiment, but it also taught me, oh yeah, I'm really an adventure writer who includes romance in whatever stories I'm writing. And I probably will even continue that series. So I thought a lot about it. I thought about a pen name. I thought about what other writers do. And I'm an indie. I get to do whatever I want. And it was just also too much work to maintain another pen name. I already had sort of the two identities, one as a teacher and a coach and the other as a novelist. And I speak to those audiences each a little differently in my newsletters. So I really thought long and hard about it. I'm like, I cannot complicate my life any further than it already is. I'm sticking to one name. And, if audiences love your voice, they'll go wherever you go. My audience isn't saying to me, more of this or more of that. They're just saying to me, more of whatever you got, Beth. I mean, I've asked them.
More of Beth, right? Yeah.
More of you. Whatever comes out of you, we want it. We like what you're doing. And I work with beta readers a lot. I love what you were saying about feedback. I so encourage, write, read, and get a lot of feedback and learn how to digest feedback and get feedback from people who are supportive, avoid the folks who just want to nitpick and tell you how you should do things, and rather look at what you've done and say, ooh, I like this. I'm curious about that. Work with people who help you bring out you. And so I work with a lot of beta readers during the process before I publish. And I've had people read book after book after book, and I've just really worked hard to cultivate this crew of beta readers. Plus I have my critique partners. And I have my husband, who's like my first critique partner, who I met at a critique group like 26 years ago almost, and where we are very different as writers, but we can look at each other's work and offer very supportive feedback, depending on whatever each other wants. We do our best.
You know, that's funny that you mention that. When I got into my writers group, it was at a local community college, and I was encouraged by a friend of mine who was an associate professor there. I took her class, and when I had written my first novel, she was the one that looked at it, and kind of I was going through that imposter syndrome. I was like, well, is this really good? Is this publishable? She's like, yeah, but you should really kind of take the class and you'll get some feedback and learn how the process goes. And I was the only fantasy adventure writer in the group. So it was a lot of memoirists. It was some romance. There was one guy that was writing nonfiction. But you're right. It's people that see it through a different optics. You know, like they're looking at it through what they typically read. And now I'm forcing them to read, you know, fantasy adventure, and I'm reading romance. It's the strangest thing. And it's like, but you see it, and then you gain an appreciation for it. So what Ezra, your husband, was doing for you is, you know, I had a class that was doing for me, and that was really valuable. And I learned a lot in the year, you know, cause it was basically like a 2-semester thing, and it wasn't for a grade or anything, but it was just that, you know, it was something that helped me become a better author. And the fact that you don't have to go far. You're in the same house. You could have someone there, you know, kind of give you some real strong, and like you said before, helpful critique. I mean, anybody can criticize. There are trolls out there everywhere. And, you know, sometimes, you know, critics can be, you know, just harsh for no reason. But ultimately you've got to look at, you know, throw away the fluff. You know, when I give my mom something to read, it's always the best things she's ever read, right? That doesn't count, right? You got to give it to somebody who reads your genre and understands a little bit more about, you know what you're trying to, and what's contemporary and stuff like that. So I think that's that's a great piece of advice to give to our listeners too. But you mentioned your husband for a second, and there's two bits I have to cover because I found them incredibly interesting in your bio when you sent it over to me. The first is you have over 1,000 books at your house. And I don't know if it's the same in California, it is in Pennsylvania, but if you have 1,000 books, you actually qualify as a lot. You could apply for library status. Have you done anything crazy like that? Or are you just a big collector and that kind of stuff? Like, why the 1,000 books are you building the 2,000? Do you have a goal?
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. Well, you know, I've actually never counted. I've just moved house so many times and had boxes and boxes and boxes of books that I kind of estimated. But ever since I was a kid, you know, I went to libraries all the time after school, especially middle school and high school, and I adored them, but I never had a budget for books. So as soon as I started earning money, I started buying books, and it's just something I adore. And even though I read a lot online now and have a Kindle, they're like artifacts of my life. I just cannot let go of them. I mean, I purge every once in a while and let go of things, but it's just, I didn't know that. So library status, I think of it as our library. It's not now, it's my books and Ezra's books.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even count our print editions of our own books, which we also have, and we have multiple versions of those because we get, you know, the author copies to look at, to proof. So I'm sorry, what was your question? I just kind of blown away.
I just wanted to know if you would ever, yeah. if that was the goal,
no.
Do you have a goal like to apply, get that application online and become a library, let people borrow stuff,
okay.
Or were you just doing it because you're a collector? Yeah.
Yeah, I love
it. Like you
books.
Said, it almost like you're collecting memories with them, though, which I think is pretty cool.
Also, yes, their memories. I mean, just today I was referencing a childhood book that I've had because I'm working on a film and I was able to tell my crew, I'm like, this book is really important to me and this is why, and here's the visual elements of this book. And I'm going to take pictures of it and give it to our cinematographer because it's like I was deeply inspired by this book and I've had it since I was a child. And I have a lot of my childhood books because I was obviously an avid reader from a very young age. And so like they carry memories, but they also carry inspiration. And I have a bunch of books I haven't read. I will eventually get to them. And many of these books are resources that I go back to again and again as well. It's been a lifelong dream. And I know it's a bit unusual on the one hand, but I also grew up in a household that where both my parents had tons of books. None of them, they weren't that accessible to me because they were for them, but I was like, oh, someday I'll have my own my own library. Yeah, it's been just a dream of mine.
Well, you know, you mentioned your film and the project you're working on. Are we allowed to talk about that? Can I ask you a couple of questions about it?
Sure, absolutely. I can tell you what I can tell you. Yeah.
Sure. So a few months ago, right before the holidays, we had a cinematographer on, and what I found interesting about our conversation was that, you know, just like we as authors, we pour into our novels what's in our heads, and we see things and we describe them with words. He does the same thing. He tells a story through the angles that he shoots, you know, whether it's from the ground up or from the sky down, or, you know, different filters that he puts on his lenses and things like that. Knowing that you're both an author and now, you know, obviously you've got this film project coming up, has switching medium, you know, from one to another been challenging, fun, rewarding, all of the above? I mean, what do you find that you're enjoying about that more than not?
Yeah, well, I love the collaborative aspect. I just have to say that is the first most exciting part for me, to go from, you know, here's an idea, because I'm also the writer, I wrote the script, it's based on Henrietta the Dragonslayer, and then going into bringing my ideas to a group of young filmmakers and say, what do you think? Has been just awesome, getting all kinds of feedback. And also, I don't have to know everything. I'm like, what's next? And my DP, director, my first AD, sorry, assistant director, who I just had a meeting with today, she's like, well, I think this, you know, and like, we'll feel it out together. And this is not an overnight thing. I have been working on wanting to be in film for over 15 years, and I started actively contributing and volunteering at a local summer camp for teen girls and gender expansive folks 7 years ago, and just being immersing myself. And they make the movies. They make a little movie, a 5-minute film in 5 days, and the adults are there just to help them stay on schedule. And but we don't have any of the answers. We're like, so what would you like to, you know, is this going to be a narrative or a documentary? And oh, where do you want to put the camera? You know, who's going to do sound, who's going to do some, you know, hold the mic, and who's going to act? You know, we don't do anything except hold stage, really. And it gave me an opportunity to start dabbling. I came up with one story idea. I shared it with them, got really great response, but wasn't in love with it. Then, you know, Henrietta the Dragonslayer, I've always wanted to put it on film, and instead of adapting the novel, I'm writing new stories that take place after book 3. Because this character won't let me go. So I have to come up with new adventures, and that's been fun. So I've been working on the stories and the different adventures. It's going to be a TV show, actually. And we're just creating the pilot teaser, the teaser for the pilot, as a short film. And
oh,
I wrote it.
Gosh, so much fun.
Yeah, it is so much fun. And I'm learning a ton. I'm the director, I'm the producer, and I'm the writer. So I've had to learn script writing, which has been a little bit of a mental shift. And, you know, what you can and cannot include. As a producer, I already understood, like, the power of getting people together and, you know, organizing things and setting goals and just working the process. I've already done a ton of that. But being a director is new. So I've been studying all about that. And I have these young filmmakers, some of whom have made 2 or 3 or 4 short films already. So, for example, my DP, director of photography, they are this ambitious 17 going on 18-year-old who is already doing the professional thing. Like, they already handed me what's called a lookbook, which was visual elements. Like, do you like this or this for the opening, the idea of the desert in the morning? Or do you like this or this? This or this? So they gave me all these choices. It was so fun. And that was just a preliminary start. And I'm like, wow, this person really, I mean, and they even said, they're like, I'm a geek about all things cinematography. I'm like, yes, perfect person for the job. So I don't have to know everything, which I'm so grateful for. And, you know, we're learning as we go. It is very exciting.
Well, you know, we're coming to that part of the show where we usually do a lightning round, but there are so many other questions. Our time has flown by. This has been a great, great conversation, and I don't want to stop. So if you don't mind, I'm going to skip the lightning round for this interview. I'll have you back on another show at a different time because there's a couple of questions I just need you to answer. The first is, tell us a little bit about your work in progress. Like, what are you working on now? I know you got the film stuff we just talked about, but on the book side, tell us a little bit about the book that you're working on and when the next book comes out.
Absolutely. So I am now working on book 5 in my Janie McAllister mystery series, my space station investigator. And this is a whole new adventure. It's kind of like a new quartet of stories I'm putting together. It's over 100,000 words. It's about Janie finding her footing after a loss and kind of recreating her life. And along the way, solving 3 murders and going to like 5 different locations, several new space stations. And it is due out sometime in the future because I've decided not to put pressure on myself. It may be out this fall, but with the film work, it might be the following year. I honestly don't know. The book is done. I'm just doing a bunch of research to add in a whole bunch. I need to still work on it. But so I'm waiting before I release it because there's a bunch of things I need to work out.
Well, the last question I have for you before we close is, I know you mentioned off the top that you write stuff with a focus on empowering women. And the girls that are your heroes in the novels, you hope that they inspire women and girls in real life to do the same thing. Since you've made that sort of a cause, what inspired you to do that? I mean, was it something that was just you found was a hole in the marketplace, or was it more than that?
Wow. Yeah. I was just writing about that in this application I had to put in for the film. This is actually a lifelong passion of mine. And it stemmed from my own experience being a reader as a girl, reading tons of folklore and fairy tales. That was what I read when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old, just gobbled all those up. And at the time in the 70s, there were no accessible folktale books for children that featured a girl going on an adventure, slay the dragon or the giant or, you know, climb to the top of the mountain. They were all boys. Now they exist, thank goodness, because the feminists did their work, and now those books exist in film and TV and, you know, on bookshelves. But at the time, they did not. And even though I grew up in a feminist family, I was like, wait, where's the girls? I want to go on adventures. How come I'm not in these stories? So that has been the driving force my entire life. And even now, I'm so surprised that there's still such a need to see girls going on adventures, being empowered, making the hard call, hanging out with their friends, all being incredibly brave in their own way. And I just didn't see that. And I still hunger for it, and I still don't see enough of it. So that's been my driving force my entire life. And stories influence me so much. I want to be the one who influences. I was so fed and so nurtured by all those stories. And now that's why I give back. That's why I write these stories. It feeds me, but also I know that I'm feeding the world with my stories. So there you go. That's why I do.
Great answer. Yeah, and that you could tell that's from the heart, right? So look, we have about a minute left. Quickly in 30 seconds or less, remind everybody how they can get a hold of you and where they can buy your books.
Absolutely. BethBarani.com or at BethBarani on any of the socials. BethBarani on Amazon. You'll find all my fiction and nonfiction. I'm just BethBarani everywhere. It's BARANY. And I'm out there.
Well, Beth, thank you very much for coming on The Realm this evening. We appreciate it. I know our listeners and our subscribers will enjoy this when this goes up online tomorrow, too, for those that missed it live tonight. And thanks again for coming on The Realm. And to our followers, thank you for lending me your ear tonight. And until next time, I am J.B. Hilliard, and may your gods go with you. Beth, thanks again, and you're welcome back anytime. Let's finish our conversation in a follow-up.
Thank you, J.B. I very much appreciated it.
My pleasure. Talk soon.